The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the latest podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, of course, the former WWF head writer, the former WWE World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How are you doing today, sir?
What is going on, my man, John? Did you have a good holiday? You have a good new year? Everything good, man?
Yes, just went by too fast.
Yeah.
It always goes by too fast.
Always, but I agree with you on that, man.
How was yours?
It was good. Same thing, bro. You know, my daughter lives in Brooklyn, so she was in from out of town, so she stayed with us a while. So it was pretty nice.
She a hipster over there in Brooklyn?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So anything going on in the wrestling world? I haven't heard anything happening in the last 24 hours or so.
No, it's just, you know.
Just like the shakeup of the world, yeah.
A Double J has decided to start in with me, so I got to deal with him. Then we got the Vince news, which I was alluding to.
Yeah,
there was. I know you are. There was no doubt in my mind. Somehow, some way, there was no doubt Vince was coming back in 2023. And I got to be honest with you, John, and I am not BSing you. I am glad, and the reason why I am glad because on Russo's brand, bro, you know, it gives me something to talk about. I can't talk about these lame shows that I don't care about. I literally want to kill myself. So when something like this happens, that's real news. You can imagine the drama going on in the company. You can imagine the talent saying, wait a minute, man, did I put Triple H over? Did I bury Vince? What's going to happen? So, I mean, stuff like this, I love because it just creates content.
Man, this is crazy. People were saying that show Succession and HBO, it's over the top. I don't know about that because it's pretty much this going to happen, this WWF storyline real life right now, because I saw Declan McMahon, which is pretty funny. He was liking all these Instagram posts that said Vince is coming back. Obviously, it's Shane's son. It's his grandson. He was liking all these posts that his grandfather's coming back. So something's going on there. Is Shane making his way back in? Vince obviously is making his way back in. He got rid of a few board members already as of this morning. They're going to be gone. Yeah. I guess maybe officially it's not until April, but they'll be gone. Barrios and Wilson, who were gone supposedly because of Nick Khan. You know, Vince okayed it, but it was supposed to be because of Nick Khan. They're back in. And Vince is still the owner. Right. He's still the boss. So holy hell, what's going
on? Absolutely great. Absolutely great.
Throw in the little wrinkle of, I got bad advice, is what he said. I got bad advice. I asked somebody, like, who could be the people that gave him bad advice? They said Stephanie. So
there's no doubt in my mind. I'm telling you right now. This is how I really, really, really feel. Bro, and I'm telling you this based on experience. You got to remember with me, bro, going all the way back to 2002. Vince brought me back. Stephanie was the head of creative. She's married to Triple H. So basically, they're the head of creative. Okay?
Yep.
Vince brings me back without telling either one of them. Okay? So I don't realize this. I think everybody's on board, right? So after Vince hires me, Stephanie must have been out of town or something. And I don't know if Vince planned it that way. Like literally, like I'm going to bring Russo in and I'm going to sign him and Stephanie's going to be out of town. But I remember when everything was said and done, she wasn't there. So I had to go in a room by myself and have a call with her. Okay, now you got to understand, John, last time I saw her was 1999. I never had a problem with Stephanie. She used to sit in on creative, and you know, me and Ed used to try to teach her as much as we could. There was never an issue, never a problem. All of a sudden, bro, now I'm on the phone with her. Bro, she's speaking to me like I'm her redheaded stepchild. And that's when I knew right then and there, two things happened right then and there. I knew, and I was like, I said to myself, bro, she knew nothing about Vince hiring me. She knew nothing. And that's when I also knew no way in hell this is going to work out, because I knew her and Triple H wanted to be in charge, and they don't need a successful guy like Vince Russo around who knows what he's doing. And that is when, right after that phone call, you know, I flew back to where was I at the time? Colorado or Georgia? I don't even remember. I don't even remember where I was, but I think Georgia. I flew back to Georgia and I got on the phone with Vince and I was like, bro, this ain't going to work. So why I think that is pivotal from 20 years ago is, bro, I think Stephanie and Hunter always wanted to be in charge without a shadow of a doubt. And I really believe, unfortunately for Vince, he created this problem for himself with these NDAs and all this stuff coming out. But first of all, you know, we're not sure where the stuff was leaked from. Was it really a friend of a friend of a friend? Or could it have been a Triple H that smartened somebody up on the board? I mean, we don't know. But there is no question in my mind. These two thrive on power. This was an opening. Whether it looks like they took advantage of it or not, I say they did. All of a sudden, man, they're in the saddle. Vince is home. Vince is out of the picture. Bro, seriously, how long did you think that was going to last? If there was any way or any opportunity whatsoever for Vince to get back in there, you knew he was going to get back in there. So now, bro, heads are going to roll. And I swear, bro, this whole time I'm reading the comments of the talent of kissing Hunter's ass and what a better place it is, and, you know, comments about Vince. And with every one of them that I was read, I'm like, man, bro, you are going to be so sorry that you said that when Vince comes back in charge. Because, bro, you got to understand, man, there are people in that office like Bruce Pritchard. And Bruce Pritchard, bro, is the greatest politician of all time in the wrestling business. So I promise you, bro, while first and foremost, Bruce has to protect his job, while he's still there and he's still on, you know, Team Hunter and Stephanie, bro, he is taking notes on everybody and what is said and reporting right back to the boss. Because, bro, I am telling you, Bruce's loyalty to Vince was stronger than a son for a father. I mean, I am telling you, Bruce loved Vince. The only question mark to me is, bro, if you're Hunter and Stephanie, you have to realize that, number one. Number two, Stephanie had already fired Bruce once before. Now, I don't know, bro. Maybe when Bruce got rehired, there was a clause in his contract that he couldn't be fired. I don't know. But for a guy that is so loyal to Vince, I never understood why they kept him hanging around. Because I guarantee you, bro, he was on the phone with Vince daily.
The thing with that is, maybe because Vince, technically, he never wasn't the owner. He always was the boss. Maybe he said, you're not firing him. You can fire all these other people. I don't care. You can bring these people back. You're not firing Bruce, probably because he was his eyes and ears.
Absolutely, yeah. Bro. Something like that. So that's why, bro, to me, like, the dynamics and the players and the game is so freaking interesting to me. And again, John, if I'm still head writer of the WWE, this is the story. This is the story that bleeds over to a worked version on television, and this is how you get viewers back. But again, like they always do, bro, they will totally ignore this, and it will be the same shitty product.
If I was them, they would never do this, but if I was them, documentarian style, you know, like a documentary, I'd be filming Vince every day. Like, what's he doing? You know, yep. Who's this girl he's dating? Him talking to McDivitt. Obviously, McDivitt's back in the fold. He was supposed to retire. Obviously, he's back in, and they're working stuff. Oh, call Wilson and Berrios, who they fired months ago. Like, I would film all it, because imagine how many people would be interested in that. Like, tremendous. What the hell really goes on with Vince?
Yep, absolutely, 1,000%, bro. That's what people are interested in.
Man, it's so much like that show. It's crazy. Succession on HBO, good show. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, the guy, he doesn't want to let go. He's still the boss. He's still there. But he just said, oh, I'm not going to get involved with creative, though, that Triple H. Do you buy that? Do you believe that?
No, not at all.
It was almost like .. yet. You know what I mean? It was almost one of those things.
Exactly. Bro, listen, once he gets that foot back in the door, you know, it's going to be big picture. Because there's so much going on right now, whether the company is going to be sold, not be sold. There's so much he's going to be involved with, but he will eventually get around to that.
What do you think about, like, all Triple H's guys that he Regal's back, Road Dogg's back? Are they possibly going to be gone again if Vince is back in charge?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bro, you got to understand wrestling is so spiteful and so petty. The fact, bro, listen, those guys could come back in. They could be doing the best job in the world. The fact that Vince fired them and Triple H rehired them, that is Triple H saying, Vince, you made a mistake. So I hired those people. No, bro, Vince McMahon doesn't make any mistakes. And bro, that was a bad look for him. Everybody that Hunter brought back after Vince left was a bad look for Vince. That's basically saying, Vince, you didn't know what you were doing. You let this one go, that one go, and the other one go. You made a mistake, Vince. I'm bringing him back. No, bro, Vince doesn't make any mistakes.
So what?
And it won't happen. I mean, John, let me tell you something. It won't happen all like in one swoop. Slowly but surely, you will see this company return to its exact form prior to Vince ever leaving.
Wow. That's just crazy to think, like, okay, he's gone. He's not really gone. I think a lot of people had the blinders on, though, because he was never really gone, because he's still in charge of the board. He's still the owner of the company. He still obviously had to make decisions. But it's one of those things where they had the blinders on. So now he throws out there, if I'm not back in charge, you're never able to sell, which was the end game for him, apparently, or you can't make new media rights deals, which is the lifeblood of the company. So no Fox, no, you know, for SmackDown, no USA for Raw. Like, that's another little caveat. Him almost saying, like, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this. I'm still the boss.
Bro, you know what it is? If there is any heat whatsoever between him and Hunter and Stephanie, and I do believe there is. I do believe there is, because like I said, bro, I've had my experience with Hunter and Stephanie, and if there was a scene for them to gain power, I'm telling you, bro, she would throw her old man down the river. But the bottom line is, if there really is heat between the sides, you think Vince is really going to allow them to run his company? The point is, Vince will sell the company before he allows them to run it if there is any heat. And you bring up a very interesting point. Have Vince and Shane settled all their differences during this? Is Shane now a soldier? I mean, this is great. I mean, like I said, bro, this is the stuff I love. I could talk about the business of the business all day, because, bro, you've got such the people you have involved in this game are ruthless, absolutely ruthless. And, you know, again, man, if you read between the lines and, you know, Triple H and Stephanie were acting as owners of the company, Vince McMahon is forced to sit home. He's watching this. And who knows, bro, if Vince is suggesting this and suggesting that and they're not doing it. You know, you have no idea. Then all of a sudden it's like, okay, bro, like I will sell this company before I allow the two of you to continue running it. How about that? Maybe that's the point it got to, John.
And everyone was like, what was he doing while he was retired, quote unquote, or did he take vacations? Who's to say he wasn't literally putting Shane maybe back together, maybe getting McDivitt, obviously, you
absolutely
know, one of the smartest guys, absolutely, you know, of all time, getting these guys together and like, absolutely, let's find somebody to buy it. I'm going to come back January 1st or whatever. I'm going to take control and let's, you know, maybe absolutely the whole time he found somebody to buy,
John,
it.
This is what he was doing. This did not happen with a phone call, bro. This is plotting. And I'll tell you, the one he's probably doing the plotting with is, you know, definitely McDivitt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, McDivitt has been Vince's, lawyer and confidant way before I ever worked there. So he's definitely saying when this all goes down and everything like this, then all of a sudden some stuff starts happening he doesn't agree to. He's Jerry. What are our options? What do we do? Okay. You know, like you said, bro, does that involve Shane? And then, bro, like I said, who's he got on the other side? You know what I'm saying? You know, is it Pritchard? I mean, who is it? Who's giving him all the information and all the heads up from what is said in every meeting? What Triple H is saying about him in meetings? Is Stephanie getting full of herself? I mean, trust me, bro. Was Kevin Dunn a mole? We know Kevin Dunn and Stephanie and Triple H never got along. So it's interesting, like you said, bro, knowing those two, just like the reason that I did not go back because of them. I wasn't going to have a freaking power struggle with them. Bro, you want to be in charge? Be in charge. That's I'll go work at TNA. And that's what I did. But it is interesting, bro, how Kevin Dunn and Bruce Pritchard weren't the first two to go. Because if it were up to Stephanie and Triple H, they would have been the first two to go. If not for anything else, they couldn't be trusted because of their relationship with Vince. You think Kevin Dunn is going to be loyal to Triple H and Stephanie McMahon before Vince, who his father worked for? Bruce Pritchard is going to be loyal to Stephanie and Hunter. He was working for Vince McMahon in his freaking 20s. There's no question where their loyalty lies. So there has to be a reason why they were never let go immediately.
And the other crazy thing is like, okay, let's look at the stock. Oh, what's going on? Like, jumped to $80, went up 10 bucks. Like, oh, okay, maybe Vince is the right guy. And the rumor of the sale, obviously Vince very smartly said that because that gets the stock market going. So he just made himself, you know, richer and richer as each day goes by. So then you think like, okay, like what's going to go on? Is he going to sell? If he's not in charge, like you were mentioning, he'll sell it because he doesn't want Triple H and Stephanie. I always think too, like it's so interesting, the other guys, like you mentioned Kevin Dunn. I wonder what Heyman is up to because he's a Vince guy. I wonder what Michael P.S. Hayes is up to still.
Absolutely,
there. He's
bro.
A Vince guy. Like, absolutely, man, I wish there was, I know they would never do it, but I wish they would film backstage and like kind of like get a real feel of like, we know who Triple H's guys are, but we also know who Vince's guys are. But how were those guys with Triple H while Vince was quote unquote gone?
Absolutely. Bro, that's the story. That is the story. I said that freaking years ago. I said years ago, there are so many camps and so many agendas. And then the talent has to roll the dice of which camp do we join? And so, you know, so, okay, bro, that this is a crapshoot, because if we join the camp of the guy in power and the guy in power loses power, we're done. There's such a dynamic going on. And bro, like I said, this is the stuff that is interesting to me. And that's why so many people don't understand, bro, when I always get the, oh yeah, bro, you're bitter, you're this, you're that. Bro, you have no idea to be a Bruce Pritchard right now, to be a Vince McMahon guy right now, and, you know, Triple H and Stephanie are running the company and Vince is making these moves and whatnot. You have no idea, bro, what these people are going through, John. It is hell. It is hell. It is a psychological, emotional hell every day of what's going to happen today. What is the game plan? Who is going to say what? I swear, especially, bro, like people who are my age. Heyman is my age. Hayes is my age. Bruce is a little younger than me, not much. You know, for them to be going through something like this at this point in their lives, God, bro, it is so stressful. It is so not fun. And it will literally take years off of their lives. That's why this is the part of it, bro, that I never wanted anything to do with.
It's just, it's fascinating. Like, what the hell is going on over there? Because you knew Vince was simmering. You know, I mean, something was going on, and it was going to burst. I don't know why people kind of, you know, didn't believe it, but. The other factor that I thought was interesting, it's like, okay, where's Nick Khan in this whole thing? Was he the guy that leaked stuff? You know, was he the guy that really wanted to get rid of Wilson and Barrios? Where does he stand? But he's also buddies with The Rock, and we're hearing stuff about The Rock for WrestleMania. And, you know, you keep hearing he's not really a Triple H guy. I mean, we've known that forever. Triple H and Shawn Michaels used to bully him, try to get him fired. I mean, Bret Hart's told the stories. The Rock has told the stories. He refused to work with Michaels, The Rock. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff that you kind of read between the lines, like, ah, that was so many years ago. But then you hear that, okay, Rock only wants to deal with Vince. Lesnar kind of got over that after Vince talked to him. Like, no, you could still deal with Triple H. But that was a problem with Lesnar. Do you see that as, like, Vince has to come back so The Rock can come back for Mania kind of thing, or no?
I think that is the least amount of their worries. Okay. Bro, let's face it, John. We're going into mid-January, and they don't even know, they don't even have a clue what the WrestleMania card is. Whereas in the past, bro, you knew for 6 months. You knew for 6 months what that WrestleMania card is. They don't have a clue. So I really believe, bro, like that, and anything creative like that way, I think is the least of their problems right now.
Where does The Rock align himself, though? That's another key cog in the wheel. Does he align himself with Vince or Nick Khan, or where's he going?
Vince, absolutely. You got to understand, bro, it's the bloodlines. You know,
but he's been friends with Nick Khan since he was a kid.
Yeah, he's been. Well, bro, but I really do believe, bro, Nick Khan's in Vince's camp. You know, wow, bro, okay. if you know Vince McMahon, okay, bro, and this thing went down, and you knew, bro, Vince doesn't want to go home. They're literally dragging the guy out of his office, kicking and screaming. You know that if you know Vince. This isn't Vince saying, oh, great, bro, early retirement. No, bro. He's being – so if you know Vince and you know the situation – you know, bro, he's going to do everything in his power to get back. Nick Khan, I don't know Nick Khan, but what I read about him is a very, very smart, brilliant man. Him knowing Vince McMahon, he knows, bro, somehow, some way, he's going to find his way back in. I would not be the least bit surprised if he was part of this master plan while he was appearing to be loyal to Triple H and Stephanie. I would not be surprised at all. I mean, come on, bro. Who are you going to pony up to in this situation? Who are you going to put your money on in this situation? Especially, you know, like you said, bro, Vince still owns 80% of the company. Who are you going to bet on here? Are you going to bet on Vince McMahon, or are you going to bet on Stephanie McMahon and Triple H? This to me was an easy gamble.
And Nick Khan is the deal maker. He's the guy that makes the deal. So he's the guy most likely that will get them a deal. So Vince probably talking to them the whole time, orchestrating with McDivitt and maybe Shane, who knows, orchestrating a sale of the company to somebody. And who knows if it's a Dana White type deal where you sell it, but it's like, I'm still in charge. okay, and they sign off on it, like, we're going to make the profits, but you still run the company. It could be something like that. It's hard to kind of believe Vince would do that, but I do believe that Vince, like he said, is looking to sell, and I think that Nick Khan is the guy to help him make the deal to finalize it.
Bro, they may already have – Nick Khan may have already been negotiating a deal, and I said this at the beginning too. I said, bro, when they sent Vince home, this really hurts stock in the company, because when you are negotiating television contracts, when you are negotiating any big deals, bro, these people want to be in business with Vince McMahon. They know Vince's, you know, lineage and Vince's history and Vince's experience. They want to know they're doing business with Vince McMahon. They're looking at Triple H like as a wrestler, bro. And they're looking at Stephanie as, well, that's the daughter of Vince. That's not Vince McMahon. So, bro, who knows? Khan could have had a buyer that was interested, and that buyer could have said, you know what, though? If Vince McMahon isn't running the company, I'm not interested. You know, I mean, that very, very well could have happened. Khan could have reported that to Vince. And then here you go, bro, you know?
Man, what a weird kind of thing. Is we remember a few months ago, or maybe it was almost 6 months ago, we get that weird tweet. Guys, 77, time to retire or whatever. We're going to get a tweet. Guys, I'm 78 and I'm back. You know what I mean? Like, I'm unretired. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely, bro. Yeah.
I was bored and I got to come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, bro, this plan has probably been in effect from day one. From day one, bro, they were probably getting all their, all their chips in order, bro. And they were plotting this out from day one.
What do you think about morale? It seemed like morale was up with Triple H in charge, and you know, there was a little bit more freedom for the guys. Do you think the morale will go down again?
They're scared to death right now, bro, because I can't tell you how many interviews I read where there were pop shots taken at Vince without mentioning his name. I swear to God, bro, I don't remember a pro Vince interview by any current talent since Vince has left. I swear it's all praising and putting over Triple H and how better things are. Now, bro, trust me, I understand. With what Vince was charged with, bro, I'm not going to sit there and put Vince over either. I mean, understand that. But I mean, bro, there were people that buried him without mentioning his name. It's you know, I mean, to me, it would have been, listen, man, you know, Vince McMahon hired me. I'll always be very thankful for Vince McMahon. I'm not involved with what's going on legally. I have nothing to do with that. Very thankful, you know, that Vince hired me, that I got the opportunity to work on the Vince. Now these two are my new boy. That's not what you read, bro. You read from everybody how great it was to work there without Vince in charge.
Man, if I was them and it's smartly, I'd wait till he's dead before saying stuff like that. Because he'll come back, you know, he'll come back from the grave and take control again.
These people, these young kids, they don't, I don't know if they think Vince is the character on TV. I don't know what they think. Bro, this guy is a vindictive monster. Monster, bro. Like, trust me, like I said, man, they were keeping notes, who's saying what, who's doing what, and you are going to see. Like I said, bro, it's not going to be in the first week, but things would happen in the first week and more things the second week. And by the time he's done in 3 to 6 months, he's going to have that company right back where it was.
Already put Barry Osa Wilson on the board. So, I mean, he's got his team together already. And Nick Khan, who you're thinking is on the team, got him. Maybe Shane on his way back. It just seems like he's got everything in place. And, oh, by the way, he owns 80% of the company. So, and he's the majority. He's like, oh, or whatever, 51% and 80% of the board. So,
bro,
it's like,
you know what the interesting thing is? Bro, think about this. Think about how long Triple H has been doing this. A top guy getting paid millions and millions and millions of dollars every year. Think about Stephanie McMahon, okay? Bro, there's a real easy solution here. Go start your own wrestling company. You guys have the funds. You guys definitely have the connections. Vince McMahon does have enemies. Go start your own wrestling company. I mean, I could tell you this without a shadow of a doubt. Under Hunter, it'll be a billion times better than AEW. I wouldn't be surprised, bro. Like, honestly, looking at the ratings of AEW, and again, bro, yesterday's show was 15% down from the year before. Looking at those ratings, for Triple H and Stephanie to approach a TBS and a TNT and saying, listen, man, if you want to continue to have wrestling on your network, we know how to do it. You know what I'm saying? So, bro, I swear, I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that happen, because, again, if there is heat between the two sides and Vince McMahon regains control, where's Stephanie and Triple H going to go? And bro, they got a shitload of money. They could start their own promotion freaking tomorrow if they wanted to.
Now, years ago, many years ago, obviously Vince was kind of down and out. The years around 1997, you're kind of stepping in. So let's talk about that year. King of the Ring 1997, back on June 8th, Providence, Rhode Island, Providence Civic Center, attendance 13,312. So nice house there. The tagline is, it's bound to get medieval. Brace yourself. Pay-per-view buys, 144K. So not great, but this is around the time that WCW is kicking ass and taking names.
People have to understand, bro. I swear to God, that's what, again, bro, when you look at my WCW track record, when I went back those first 3 months before the politics started and I went home, you could see that the ratings were going up. The numbers are there. Anybody can look them up. But the last show WCW did before I started writing was a 2.5. The last show they did before I left was a 3.5. So you're talking about one whole rating point within 3 months. But my point is, bro, what they always like to use against me is, oh, yeah, but look at his pay-per-view buys while he was there in those 3 months. Like, people don't understand, bro, and you got to educate them, because a lot of people weren't around during that time, okay? Bro, we're talking about a time, bro, when pay-per-views were, what, $50, John? Was it $49.99?
In 97, either $29.95 or $39.95.
Yeah, $29.95, $39.95. That was the price of a pay-per-view. Bro, when you had two companies, a lot of times, John, you can only afford one pay-per-view.
I know my dad would say, your friend can order one, and then we'd order the WCW, and my buddy would order WWF.
Especially like when it comes to kids and teenagers, the parents are paying for. The parents aren't going to pay for two. So, bro, during that time, they literally pick one. And what are they going to pick? They're going to obviously pick the hottest company without a shadow of a doubt. So this is a time where, WWF is getting their asses kicked. WCW is on fire. And my parents won't let me get both pay-per-views. I'm going to pick one. It's obviously going to be WCW, bro. That's why when I went to WCW, my concern wasn't pay-per-view buys. My concern was, I got to get us back in the ratings game. Once I get these people back, now the pay-per-view buys are going to start going this way again. So, again, bro, that's why when I hear the buys during this time, I totally, totally, totally get it.
When you look back at June 97, do you remember where you were? Like, I know you're technically a part of the team, but do you remember if you're getting more influence? Because it seems like it's growing.
Is this Austin and Jake?
This is Austin and Shawn Michaels, and then the main of the King of the Ring main event would be Triple H and Mankind. So this is when Triple H is, or Hunter Hearst Helmsley is getting his big push.
And the next King of the Ring is Jake and
no, the year before was Jake.
Oh, the year before was Jake and Austin.
Yeah, 96. Yep. Yeah, because they were saying Triple H was getting punished in 96. He was supposed to be the winner of 96. So they gave it to Austin smartly and rightly. It seemed to work out for everybody. So he had to wait a year, and then he gets crowned in 97, Triple H.
Well, I definitely am getting more and more involved. Because see, brother, this is, again, just so you know, John, why I just hate the wrestling business. And I don't hate people. I despise a lot of people in it. And one of the reasons is, bro, when Triple H was being punished, who do you think was the guy pulling him on the side, keeping his morale up? Bro, you got to get through this. You know what they're going to do. You know how this shit works. And keeping his name out there and writing him in, that was me. And that's why, you know, and then 2002 comes around and Triple H is doing everything in his power to keep me out of the company. Okay, bro, no problem. I don't forget shit like that. So if there is more of a Triple H involvement in this, I remember the Triple H Mick angle. I definitely, you know, wrote that and had a lot to do with it. So I would say definitely yes.
So you were a Triple H guy all the way back in 97. Absolutely.
Because he was a great guy. Bro, listen, I've not had a conversation with Triple H since 1999. I don't know the Triple H of the last 25 years. In 1990, from 1995 to 1999, 1994, I loved the guy. He was a great guy when he first came into the company. And he was a nice guy and he was a humble guy. And yeah, bro, I love the guy, and there wasn't anything I wouldn't have done for him.
What was it about him, like wrestling wise, that you liked? I mean, his size, promo, like what did you think about?
Bro, it really wasn't that, John. It was the person. It really was the person. Back then, he was very humble. It was yes, sir, no, sir, thank you. I mean, he was a student of the game. He was always, always very respectful. So it was really the man. And not so much what he had to offer in the ring. Of course, he's got the cool look, you know, with the long hair. So he's cool. He's hip. He's young. These are the things I'm really looking at, not his wrestling prowess, you know?
So when this show starts, King of the Ring 97, like we mentioned, WWE obviously kicking you guys' ass. But there are seeds that you guys are starting to, you know, get it in the right direction. You're starting to get a little bit more power, like you said. So we start off with a free-for-all match, not on the pay-per-view, it's just on, you know, the pre-show. The Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, defeated Bart Gunn and Jesse James in 6 minutes. So nothing really, just kind of a throwaway thing there. Were you a Headbangers fan? Were you?
Oh, yeah, those guys were great. Absolutely. Bro, the problem, I say this all the time. Bro, during the Attitude Era, there were so many people over that when you were the Headbangers, and as good as entertaining as the Headbangers, bro, there were just so many people ahead of you. You know what I'm saying? Because so many people were over. Bro, today, people like the Headbangers that are in that spot, they'd be on top today, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. So many people from back then who were in the middle would be superstars in today's business. The Headbangers were great, bro, but there were just so many people ahead of them, you know?
So as far as the King of the Ring itself, do you like the format? Do you like it better for TV? Do you like it better for the pay-per-view? What do you think about it? Because obviously, 8-man tournament, the winner wins the King of the Ring. Like, do you like that format?
Bro, I could tell you this from history, and you still see it today, bro. And we knew it when we were writing it, okay? John, tournaments never draw. Every time you have a tournament on television, the ratings are going to go down. And a lot of times, bro, we would write tournaments on television because we just needed like a mental break. But when we wrote a tournament on television, we knew the ratings were going to go down. bro, the reason why the ratings go down in tournaments, and again, bro, I'm talking during my time, not what they've turned the business into today. A lot of times, John, why ratings would go down during tournaments is because a lot of the matches were cold. There was no story going into the matches. This was a tournament. Some of the matches may have had stories, but not all. So there were a lot of cold matches in tournaments, and you always got a lower rating. That's why I was a fan of do the whole tournament on the pay-per-view. The matches could be longer. We don't have to worry about ratings. Do the whole tournament on the pay-per-view. I preferred that way.
So as far as the TV end of it, the quarterfinals, Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Ahmed Johnson go to a DQ. Then Hunter Hearst Helmsley is allowed back in the tournament, and Ahmed kind of gets to, as he won by a DQ, gets to pass on to the semis. But there was a spot where Hunter Hearst Helmsley said he didn't know he'd be eliminated by DQ. He was going to threaten legal action, so they let him back in the tournament. He beats Crush via pinfall. Then Goldust and Jerry Lawler. Lawler beats Goldust. Then Mankind and Savio Vega, and Mankind beats him. So that's kind of where we are as far as setting up for the pay-per-view. Vader originally supposed to be in the tournament, but had a broken nose from the match with the no-holds-barred match with Ken Shamrock from the pay-per-view before. So we're kind of lined up here with Helmsley and Ahmed and Mankind and Jerry Lawler for the King of the Ring. That's just a little bit of context and a little bit of background as we enter into the pay-per-view. When you look at the King of the Ring in general, just the, you know, the hat and everything, do you like the whole gimmick with the corny hat and the cape and stuff, or is that lame?
It's good for a heel, like I remember when I was watching back in the day, King Harley Race. I mean, yes, you know, yes. That's okay. You could only do that, bro, with the right person. When you put that king and the scepter, I hate it, bro. I absolutely hated it. Campy, stupid, silly. And just a couple years ago, I think they did the same thing with Selena Vega.
Yeah, she was the queen of the ring. That's right, bro. And she started doing a different voice. Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, really. You know, like I said, man, if you want to give it, if it's a heel and you really want to play that up, that's one thing. There's a couple of times where it worked. The other times it sucked.
So the first match, the pay-per-view, Hunter Hearst Helmsley with China defeats Ahmed Johnson, 7:45, of course, to put himself into the finals. We talked about Ahmed last time. Didn't quite get it. He was over. He had the look. But he got injured a lot.
I got to tell you, man. I swear to God, I was a big fan of Ahmed. Still am to this day. I had no idea, bro. When I look back on my career, bro, I was so focused on writing the television show. Okay, I didn't know what was going on with these guys on a talent relations level. I didn't know about any of the problems. I literally would get told by Vince at a creative meeting, back off on Ahmed Johnson. We need to write Ahmed out of the show. Bro, I would never ask why. Like, that wasn't my business. My business was the show. But it's funny, bro, because, I do a show on Russo's Brand with Stevie Ray every week. Bro, Stevie Ray and Ahmed were friends way before Ahmed was a wrestler, and he still talks to him to this day. And man, bro, like, Stevie, tells me of, like, all the heat Ahmed had at WCW and where the heat came from. And I'm like, bro, I'm listening to these stories, and I had no idea. And it's the same thing here, bro. If this guy's got a clean slate, I'm pushing this guy to the moon. But that's what happens, bro. All of a sudden you're sitting there with Vince and it's like, we got to back off. We got to start thinking about writing Ahmed out. And no questions were ever asked. That's what you did,
So Ahmed, obviously, he's going to take the loss here. Triple H advances on. Like you said, you're a Triple H guy. Were you the one pushing for him to win the tournament, or was it just ordained because he was supposed to win it the last year that he was definitely going to win it this year? Let's just book accordingly.
It probably felt, bro, like, again, it's so hard for me to go back, you know, this long and remember mindset and everything else. But a lot of times with this stuff, John, is, you know, you just got the feeling it's their time. You know what I'm saying? You just know when it's their time. And I think this was one of those things where it was really Triple H's time. Now, were they doing the DX gimmick at the time?
No, he was still the aristocrat, and he just had China with him.
Yeah, we and Sean was doing his own thing. And then after this, they came together?
Yeah, a little bit after, yeah. Sean is a baby face here, actually.
Yeah, but that was probably a part of it too, bro. A part of it too was we probably knew where we were going, putting him with Sean and knowing that we had to raise his stock up a little before we did that.
So basically, you know, here Mankind is in the other semifinal match. He defeats Jerry Lawler via submission in 10 minutes, leading up to Mankind versus Triple H later on in the evening, in the finals of the tournament. Just interesting that Lawler's in. Obviously, he's the king. He puts himself, maybe he wants to be double king. I don't know, but it's just funny. He's already Jerry the King Lawler. He wants to win King of the Ring. That kind of makes sense a little bit.
Well, bro, I'll tell you what was probably part of that too, bro, is if we knew where we were going with Triple H, you got the best guy in there with him. You know what I'm saying? You know, bro, Jerry Lawler is going to make Triple H look like $1 million. And I guarantee you that's why Jerry Lawler is in that spot.
Yeah. Oh, well, he loses to Mankind there, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Oh, Lawler loses to Mankind. Yeah. Then honestly, bro, I don't remember how he advanced so far in the tournament. I don't know.
It's just an interesting thing. It's like, Lawler is already king. Does he really need to be in King of the Ring? But I don't know. I guess Mankind needed to beat somebody
Who knows? It could have been as simple as those two guys really wanted to work together. You know, it could have been, you know, they could have asked Mick. And maybe Mick really wanted to have a match with Lawler. I don't remember, bro.
So next up, Goldust with Marlena defeats Crush with D'Lo Brown and Clarence Mason in about 10 minutes. It's just, I don't know, nothing here for this one. It's just almost like a throwaway in a pay-per-view with Goldust getting a win. And obviously this is Crush. He's still part of the Nation of Domination here. And I just felt like a throwaway here. I know love Goldust. You love the Goldust character.
Yeah, I'm with you too. And bro, you know, obviously, man, this collection of the Nation was not me. So, I mean, just you laying this out here right now, like I wasn't a fan of, you know, that Nation. So, you know, I mean, definitely I'm not going to be a proponent for that. I literally want to see that go away.
Do you think that Goldust is better as a heel? Because here he's a babyface. Do you think he's a better heel?
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
Almost seems a little odd that he's like a babyface. You know, the character doesn't scream babyface to me.
Yeah, well, that's just because of, you know, the heat of the character that we had to get away from that pretty much.
So the next match up, the Hart Foundation, Owen Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and the British Bulldog defeat Psycho Sid and the Legion of Doom in a six-man tag. The match goes 13 minutes, 30 seconds. Very interesting here. Sid and LOD is kind of like a dream team. They lose to the Hart Foundation. Sid, who was champion at WrestleMania, you know, a few months prior, is taking the pinfall here. Kind of a legal pin by Owen Hart, but it almost seems like, which is true, Sid's like on his way out.
He's in the doghouse. Yeah, I mean, if you're not... If you're sacrificing the singles wrestler over one of the tag team wrestlers, he's definitely in the doghouse here. Yeah.
Plus, you guys are leading up to Canadian Stampede the next month, where the Hart Foundation is all going to team together against Austin, Shamrock, Goldust, LOD. So it's one of those things where Sid might be the odd man out because you're trying to. Are you trying to pump up the Hart Foundation because of their big pay-per-view?
Absolutely. And, you know, bro, the cool thing is, again, bro, I couldn't tell you what was going on with Sid contraction. I could. JR could tell you all that stuff. That was his job. But, you know, bro, at the end of the day, whatever was going on, you know, Sid did the job like a pro. You know, I mean, you know, and he went on.
JR said it before. I'm sure other people would say the same joke. I'm sure Sid had softball that summer. You know what I mean? He's in a softball tournament.
You'll always hear that. You
know? Yeah. Actually, it's just so funny. The other day, I went to my buddy. He owns like a wrestling store. Sid signed a couple softballs. I was like, oh, my God. So, oh, I was like, he's cool. In on the joke now. I was like, yeah, oh, my God.
That's pretty cool.
So Sid obviously is working his way out.
What were they selling for? What were the softball selling for?
$100 a piece.
Oh,
yeah.
I was gonna say for $10, it'd be funny to buy one of those.
No, they were autographed. Like Ron Simmons was on a football. Sid was on a softball. So it's like what everybody was kind of associated with. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, like I said, Sid's the odd man out here, takes a loss. So the next matchup is the King of the Ring finals. Hunter Hearst Helmsley with China defeated Mankind in about 19 minutes and 30 seconds. Cheats a bit, obviously. You know, China gets involved, but he wins the King of the Ring. Pretty good match for the most part. It seems like Mankind and Triple H were kind of attached to the hip, and they would be for a while. I mean, they'll fight at SummerSlam. They'll have that big show in MSG, September of 97. I mean, in 2000, they have a big feud. It just seems like those two were, I know, destined to feud together for a long time.
Yeah, I remember that, bro. I remember the starting of that feud, and I remember putting those two guys together. And I really think that was a good combination. I really think they had good chemistry. They got along on a personal level. You know, again, bro, we're still really, you know, now we're really starting to build Triple H, so we got to put him with somebody that really is going to make him look good. And, you know, Mick being the pro he was, you know, made everybody look good. So I certainly understand that decision.
So Triple H, which is funny, like you think, like, oh, that corny crown, the cape, does he like it? He destroys it. He beats up Mankind with it. So nice little excuse for him not to have to have to be that corny kind of.
That's bro. Again, when you say something like that, I know that's all me. Because I know pre-Vince Russo, he would have had the crown. It would have been Queen China. I mean, without a shadow of the doubt. So when you tell me that, what did I just tell you 15 minutes ago about the crown and all that? Definitely that's what. And, bro, I'm sure, too, without a shadow of a doubt, positive Triple H did not want to be the crown wearing. I guarantee you 1,000%.
So basically, Triple H is going to go on to be, you know, the King of the Ring and almost like start where he was supposed to start the year before, it seemed, without the MSG incident with Hall and Nash and Michaels. So it's like, okay, let's restart this guy and pump it back up. But he's going to continue to
is so stupid, bro. It's like, again, bro, we talked about it at the beginning of this show. These are the things I hate about wrestling because they did a curtain call. And, you know, bro, trust me, I'm telling you, Vince McMahon did not give a shit about the curtain call. It was all the minions coming to Vince. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I remember Jim Cornette and Bruce Pritchard wanted Triple H fired. And me sitting there with them saying, are you freaking nuts? Like, I could not believe how hot they were over this. I could tell you Vince McMahon did not give a shit, but because everybody else was so hot, he had to do something. But bro, it always blows my mind that, okay, bro, you're going to let your business and your plans be affected because we got to teach this guy a lesson. That doesn't happen in corporate America, bro. In corporate America, you're fired. If an employee doesn't do something you like, you're fired. You don't keep the employee around to punish him until you feel he's been punished enough. That's always been one of the most ridiculous things about wrestling for me, bro.
So Bret Hart is there. He says he'd take five Americans, me, Pillman, Neidhart, Bulldog, are going to challenge you guys at the Canadian Stampede 5-on-5. So that's setting up that match as well. Get a little Brett appearance, and it kind of just basically sets up for the next pay-per-view because Brett is getting healthy because he was not fully healthy here. He was still had the injured knee. So Brett's getting healthy. We're setting up for Canadian Stampede, and obviously we'll get into that another time. But one of the greatest crowds I've ever heard that was that Calgary crowd. They're just nuts.
Oh, bro, that was great. Yeah. I remember that. I loved it. Bro, I swear to God, I remember, man, the one thing I remember about that, like Calgary was like so beautiful, bro. Bro, I remember, man, we were driving, bro. It was like 10 o'clock at night and it was still light out like in Calgary. Like wow. It was, bro, that place was beautiful. I remember that event. I remember that crowd. They were so into it. That was a great experience, bro. Like Calgary was one of the most beautiful places I'd ever been to.
So the next match up is between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. They are actually the current WWF Tag Team Champions. So it's champion versus champion here. Basically, they're both saying, like, no, I'm the captain of the team. No, I'm the captain of the team. I'm the leader of the team. So it's kind of a little bit of a go-between. Austin is kind of, you know, basically, after WrestleMania 13, he's basically a babyface now, but he still has the heel tendencies. Michaels is just a pure babyface. He's back. He doesn't show any signs of a knee injury, which is kind of wishy-washy. We've talked about that in the past. It's like, great match. It goes 22 minutes, double DQ as there's three refs involved. One gets knocked out. Austin thinks he's going to win. Another ref gets involved. Michaels thinks he's going to win. There's a third ref get involved. So the whole schmoz, it becomes a double DQ. Both of them end up looking strong. To me, neither one probably should lose or could lose. And I guess that was a way out of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bro, I swear to God. And again, this is where I know it's me. I love the tag team champions who hate each other. I love that. You know, but again, see, bro, because here's my question to you, John. When's the last time that was done?
I don't know. They feel like they do that every once in a while. They'll have the champions.
No? I cannot. I mean, bro, I've been watching WWE for the last 9 years.
Kind of Orton and Riddle a little bit. They kind of did that, but then they became buddies.
Yeah, but there wasn't the storyline was that, you know, Riddle was this young kid that was
he's like his protege. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a whole different story. But see the reason, bro, why you don't see this a lot is that's a story that has to be written. I mean, how do you get to the point where these two guys that absolutely hate each other are complete opposites? What is the story where they fall into the tag team champ? See, that's a story that needs to be written and crafted. And when written and crafted the right way, it's cool, bro. It's intriguing. I haven't seen that story, man. I can't tell you.
So an interesting thing that I think everybody remembers from this is a little boy. He had Down syndrome. He jumps the railing because Austin, I guess, is doing too much heel tactics. He was a Michaels fan. He loved Michaels. Michaels was very, very nice. You know, sometimes guys jump the rails and you don't know what to expect. Maybe they get beat up or whatever. Security didn't get there in time. Michaels, very nice, trying to escort him. Hey, it's okay. You know, it's okay. Then Austin is still pulling heel stuff while Michaels. So the kid, like, wants to come back at Austin again. And Michaels, they have to separate, get some refs, get some security. And then Michaels finally has to talk the kid into getting out of there because he doesn't want security doing it because he knows if he does, the kid, you know, the kid will be pissed, but if Michaels talks him down, he can nicely get the kid out of it with no sort of physical altercation. And he actually did a really good job of getting out of there. But I just thought it was so funny. Austin's like, I don't care. I'm going to be Austin. I'm going to be a character. I'm going to make sure this kid hates me even more. What, you know, whatever he was going for.
So Shawn is the baby face in this match.
It's basically, I'd say Austin is a face too, but he's almost like a tweener. But Michaels is the baby face for sure. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, bro, I no doubt in my mind, Shawn did this for all the things that you said, but it also makes him a super baby face.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's face it. So, yes, he did it for all the reasons you said, but he also knows how that's going to make, you know, the character looks.
I will give him credit, though, because he noticed the security was having like a rough time getting him out of there. So he's like, I got it. That's because he knew he could calm the kid down. Yeah. So I noticed that because the second time that he goes and gets him, it's almost like, oh, guys, let's hold on. I'll get him out of here. And then boom, he goes right back into Shawn Michaels mode, and he's having a good match with Austin.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was a nice little moment there for HBK, who, you know, at this time, a lot of people were having problems saying, like, what happened to that knee injury you had? Like, you look fine. So it was a little bit of give and take there, but he looked like a good guy at that point.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
So they both look strong, and, you know, they're both kind of – they look good. Michaels will go on, and we'll talk about that a different time, but he'll go on and get a title shot, and obviously Austin will be propelled into the Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Canadian Stampede 5-on-5 match. So then the main event of the evening, the WWF World Champion, The Undertaker, with Paul Bearer, defeated Farouk of the Nation of Domination with Savio Vega, D'Lo Brown, Crush, and Clarence Mason. The match went
– that was the main event?
Yeah, match went 13 minutes, 45 seconds. Undertaker defeats Farouk.
Why was that the main event?
That's a question I have for you. Why the hell
was I that? I have no idea, bro. Like, I have no idea why that would be the main event. I have no idea. I don't know if it was political, or I don't know, maybe Ron Simmons's contract said he had to appear in X amount of main events. I don't know. But, yeah, that's why I thought you were done with Shawn and Austin.
No, that's the main event. Undertaker, wow. Farouk.
I have no idea, bro. Bro, it had to be political, I would think.
Very strange, just because I know Undertaker's world champion. Maybe the world champion needs to be in the main event, but it didn't have that main event feel to it at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. Especially the, you know, and again, bro, those guys are, you know, obviously great, you know, great performers. You know, Undertaker and Simmons, no doubt about it. But again, you're going to follow Austin and Shawn. You know what I'm saying, bro? Yes. Like that was putting them in a tough spot too, because, you know, like I said, as over as Taker is, you know, Farouk, Ron Simmons is a champion. You still got to follow these two guys, and that's going to be hard.
So there's a lot of Nation of Domination interference in the match. Undertaker wins anyway. After the match, Ahmed Johnson comes down to save the Undertaker from a further beating from the Nation of Domination. They get into an argument, and Ahmed actually ends up giving Undertaker the Pearl River Plunge and beating him up, like, to end the show. So it's like, wow, what the hell's going on with Ahmed here? I thought we were writing him off. Now he's Undertaker.
I thought you were going to say, you know, Ahmed Johnson gets chokeslammed. I mean,
surprising. Yeah. Weird, right?
Very weird. Yeah.
Then they have a tag match on a Raw, Farouk and Crush against Undertaker and Ahmed. After this, obviously, Ahmed turns on Undertaker and turns heel and joins the Nation. So it's like, the hell's going on with Ahmed? He's getting gets to beat up the Undertaker. Like, that's odd.
Yeah, bro. I swear, you know. And again, man, I don't know if people believe me or not, and I don't care at this point. But man, whatever was going on in the office, I don't know. You know, JR could tell you a story for every reason why this guy was getting pushed and why we were backing off of this guy. And he could get into all that contractual stuff. I was just told, like I said, bro, whether to, you know, really, you know, we need to write so-and-so out. Yep. That's what I would be told.
So what do you think overall of the show? I know you didn't like that being the main event, though. Does it sound like you guys are going in the right direction?
Oh, yeah.
Last month it did. It just seems like a little odd Undertaker.
I don't know, bro. There were some, there, you know, I mean, there's some really good marquee matches in there. I mean, you know, and I think your four major players, like, you know, Mick and Triple H, and then Shawn and Steve. I mean, those are two really good matches. There's a lot of throwaway matches in here, bro. I agree with you 1,000%, but I do believe we're moving in the right direction.
All right, let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, no, John, I got bad news for you, man. I got bad news because, you know, Castrating the Marks, man, is the most popular show that we do. We just did our 300th episode. Okay, John, and you know what that is. We take clips from the shows of the wrestling journalists, and then we have a field day with them. Okay. Right. We are spinning out a show, bro, on patreon.com/RussoTWC. And the name of the show is, "Hey Ma, look, I'm doing a TV show in my basement." And what we're gonna do is, bro, we are going to watch along with certain podcasts and podcasters, and we are going to do a watch along on their shows and comment. But no, John, you've escaped that, John.
I thought you were going to say I was one of the victims.
Never. John is at the top of the heap as far as wrestling journalists are concerned, and no, never in a million years. But there are going to be a lot of people though, John, that are not going to be happy with this show.
Meltzer, Alvarez, I'm guessing those
there's,
guys.
There's yeah. quite a few. So that's going to be on patreon.com/RussoTWC, and of course, man, we got a ton of shows on russosbrand.com.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next time for a little bit of the podcast. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.